even now, I want to express deep appreciation for the hard work that has been done by so many members of this congregation. Certainly without that unity and dedication and the effort that they have put in on an individual basis and the manner in which they have worked together, it definitely would not have been possible. And I hope that that has been reflected, even if it wasn't said, I hope it has been reflected in all that you have seen as you have been here throughout this lectureship. In beginning the thoughts, I'd like to turn briefly to take note with regard to the plagues that had preceded the ones that we'll be looking at in the 9th and 10th chapters of Exodus. And one of the things that I think that you will see as we look through these, and again principally at the two chapters that I'd indicated, is the tremendous power play that is taking place. And it reflects again to a great degree the power of God and the manner in which He can and does work with mankind and achieves his purposes, and at the same time does not rob man at all of his ability to make his own decisions. But again, I think that this reflects, as you watch what unfolds, and hopefully I can present it in an appropriate manner, it to me is somewhat amazing as it does take place. One of the things that I take note of, in fact, even going back to chapter 7, in the very first verse, as the Lord speaks to Moses, and you notice the statement that he makes to him, "See, I have made thee a god to Pharaoh, and Aaron thy brother shall be thy prophet." Now, all of the events had certainly not unfolded at this time, but Moses is going to ultimately stand in a far different position in relation to Pharaoh than he did when he first came into the man's presence. And so it was that, of course, we had the plagues as they began, with the water as it was turned into blood, as we had the frogs that were brought upon the land, followed then by the lice, and then by flies. As these were taking place, and has been mentioned in time past, many of these perhaps were more of a nuisance than they were as far as really being destructive in nature. But they were beginning to show that here is a certain power that is being demonstrated. Pharaoh was also observing something, as very well he might. And that is that as each one of these events took place, if he spoke up and asked that it be ended, that Moses accommodated him, and indeed it stopped, was brought to a conclusion. Sort of ironic, however, with regard to the frogs, because instead of them just disappearing into the water somewhere or otherwise, they died and they had to rake them up into piles and were told that they stank. And you can just imagine a big pile of stinking frogs throughout the land. This obviously would leave another impression. Likewise, at first, what was occurring could be accomplished by the magicians. And this would only strengthen their importance in the eyes, no doubt, of Pharaoh as well as everyone else. The only thing that has struck my mind, and particularly as things moved on, but most assuredly as the magicians were able to perform the same miracle that was being done by Moses, if indeed they were, and that's the impression that's given. If I were Pharaoh, I think I would say, I don't need any more water turned to blood. What I need is blood turned to water. I don't need any more frogs in the land. I need someone to drive the frogs out. And if you've got some miraculous ability, you show it by undoing the other, not by doing more of the same. But we recognize when it came to the point of the lice, The magician said, "We can't do this. This is the finger of God." During these three, every indication is that the Israelites were plagued just as the Egyptians. But when the flies came, a separation was made, and there were no flies in Goshen. Now, you think with regard to it, some of you I know have bound to have been in places where there was an abundance of gnats or flies or lice or something of this nature, and they are really a bother. You just can't do much of anything as long as they're there. In fact, they've been known to drive men and animals mad simply because of their being in such great abundance and, you know, continuing to be such great pests. Notice with regard to that which had occurred, and Moses, as I had mentioned, recognized that when he asked that these things cease, that indeed it happened. Moses brought it to an end. In the 8th chapter and verse 15, we're told, "But when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them as the Lord had said." We're in the process then of hardening the heart of Pharaoh. And again, as been observed, you'll find any number of instances where it is said that God hardened Pharaoh's heart, and in other instances where it is said that Pharaoh hardened his heart. And both, of course, are completely true. And this is not anything all that unusual to think of it in that respect. Matter of fact, we apply to a lesser degree the same kind of action as God seems to have been employing in this particular situation and probably has in many, many others. And that is, if you know someone very well, you know the kind of things that they react to. We sometimes talk about who pulls your string. And, of course, we get the understanding with regard to that. I can recall a situation where several individuals that I knew carpooled together in the Washington area, and their ride, I think, probably was an hour or better each way. They learned that one of the individuals in the carpool could very easily be irritated by them bringing up particular topics and would really get him going. And so, of course, to spend the time going and coming, they many times resorted to just exactly that. And I don't know whether he ever caught on to what they were doing or not. But they knew his character. They knew the way that he would react to certain things, and they brought it about. And yet he had the full capability at any time to say nothing, to give his attention to something else, to tell them, "I'm not interested, don't bother me," or however. But nevertheless, he resorted to a certain type of reaction. We sometimes are like puppets on a string in which we allow other individuals to manipulate us to bring about our conduct, our thinking, our reaction in various ways, and yet we have not been robbed of our capability at all. We have permitted that to occur within our life. But something else is the case as well, and it's something that takes place within our lives on a daily basis, and that is that if we want something done, we go to the individual that has the capability of doing it. So if I want a mechanic, and if I particularly want him to work on a certain type of an automobile, then I look for an individual that has that capability. If I wanted an accountant, then likewise, I look for an individual with those capabilities. If I want an honest job done, I want an individual who will tell the truth, be honest in all that he does, I look for an individual that has that character. And likewise, if I'm looking for a thief and a liar, I look for an individual with that character. And God indeed has the means of putting individuals into positions who have the character that he needs to perform a certain thing, and yet without making them do anything on their own, but they'll act according to the character that they've already developed. And yet, at any moment in time, they can change and do entirely different. Pharaoh is there for a particular purpose, and God is going to show his power and his might. And he's going to leave an impression, a lasting impression upon the Jews and upon the Egyptians. And as we know, that which would occur in Egypt would virtually go all around the world. Certainly within the existing world of that time, people learned about what had occurred in Egypt, and it apparently sent fear into their minds, as God would have intended. God could have obviously have liberated the children of Israel at any particular point in time that he so desired in any number of means. But of course, he chose this means and to bring about the desired results, and obviously for a variety of good reasons, because it had a far-reaching effect. And Moses could not have appreciated, nor Pharaoh have appreciated, that they would both be spoken of in the manner in which they are within the New Testament. And so we have then an individual with the proper character that is in place. And now he stands in opposition to Moses. And you can almost picture the situation as Moses now comes into his presence. And I don't know just exactly how it was that Moses was able to come into the presence of Pharaoh under these circumstances. I think that if I were Pharaoh and the situation arose, and here is an individual, Moses, who wants to see me, one of the very first things I would ask is, who is this Moses? And why should I see him? After all, as the ruler of a very powerful nation, I think a very logical question to ask. Who is he? And not only that, as it began to unfold the influence that he apparently had with the Israelites and then those things that he was doing, I would have done more than ask who he was. I would be in the process of finding out about him. And I'm sure that Pharaoh had those individuals in his court and otherwise that would search out matters just as we do today. Aaron, very obviously, as a brother of Moses and closely allied with him, and more recently in Egypt, and I have no doubt that with a little bit of an effort, you could have traced the relationship and the family. And you might have inquired further as to where Moses then has been. And people of that time even, and I don't know how good their records were, we know that by the time we get into the Babylonian period, that they definitely had records, and the kings look back in a good number of years as to that which had been recorded. And they might have uncovered with regard to exactly who Moses was and what he had done and why he had fled Egypt. And surely, since Moses and Aaron were still alive, it is not unreasonable if there were other individuals who had lived throughout that span, and possibly some who had been in the court of Pharaoh back in the days when Moses was likewise within the household and might potentially have recognized him. Now, had that occurred, what would you have done as Pharaoh, particularly in the early stages? I don't know. And surely God was protecting him. But if I had been Pharaoh in that situation, I would have looked upon Moses not only as being a felon who had fled and whose life had been sought, but I would also look upon him and that which was occurring as one who was stirring up insurrection. And if I had been Pharaoh and looking at it from that standpoint, Moses would have been locked up about as quick as I could have had hands laid on him. And he might not have lived very long either. But I think God's hand was with him, and we'll see at a later point, and I'm sure you remember it, that the time did come when Pharaoh told him very plainly, you're not going to see my face anymore, and the day that you do see my face, you're going to die. And I think he meant it just exactly that way. I'm just surprised he didn't say it much sooner. And by the time he had waited to that particular point, I wouldn't be surprised, but he had a bit of fear as to whether he could have carried it out or not, because Moses had already demonstrated too much power. There's also a question that arises with regard to this, and that is the manner in which Moses is going to be treated. And God, as had already stated, had indicated that he was going to make him a god unto Pharaoh, and Aaron thy brother shall be thy prophet. So he's going to elevate Moses in the eyes of Pharaoh. Moses, of course, is not coming with the indication that he is acting under his own power, but rather that he is speaking on behalf of God. And as has already been raised, as Moses had raised it even when talking to the Lord, had said, you know, who I'm going to say has sent me when they ask, and that would be a natural question. And Pharaoh, not only wanting to know who is this Moses, but who is this God that you are speaking about? How are you going to demonstrate him? And how do you treat Moses then as one who is coming with the message? Is he speaking that which is truthful, or is he a fraud that is only looking out for himself? Well, clearly those miracles that were being performed by bringing on those plagues would quickly demonstrate, and as they increased as to their ferocity, would indicate that he's not acting on his own. But the inclination, I think, generally is to treat the messenger according to the prestige of the one who is sending the message, as well as the importance of the messenger. And if you don't know the person that's sending the message, you don't know how powerful they are, and here comes an individual says, I'm bringing a message to you, you're not likely to treat it with any great seriousness. And likewise, you might be a bit unhappy if you do receive a message from a very powerful person, but the person who brings it is an insignificant individual. If the person, however, who sends the message is known to be all-powerful and they send an appropriate ambassador with the message, you're likely to receive it in exactly that manner. And Moses is demonstrating and going to continue to demonstrate that the God of heaven does indeed rule over all, and that Moses is a very worthy messenger to bring that message. Let's turn over then to the 9th chapter and notice, as Moses now comes unto Pharaoh in this particular instance, and notice the language, and I want you to recognize again the situation. And you've read it many times before, I'm sure. So it's not anything that crosses your mind as being unusual. The Lord said to Moses, go unto Pharaoh and tell him, thus saith the Lord God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For if thou refuse to let them go and will hold them still, behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thy cattle which is in the field, upon the horses, upon the asses, upon the camels, upon the oxen, upon the sheep, there shall be a very grievous murrain. See anything at all unusual about this? Mind you, Moses is standing before the ruler. He is not saying, please. He is not saying, I would like for you to consider this. He's not saying, I would like to pose this as a matter to be negotiated. He is saying very, very plainly, thus saith the Lord God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. If any of you, well, I won't ask for a show of hands. Probably been a good number. Have you served in any positions of authority speak of? Of course, if you're parents, you've exercised authority over your children. But have you ever exercised very much authority anywhere? just as something of an example, and just for purposes of illustration, of course, as you in the military, as you go up in rank, obviously you increase in responsibility as well as the perks and all that go with it. And during my time, certainly within some of the tours, I had occasion, you know, where I was providing advice and setting counsel with general officers from 1 through 4 star. While there at Randolph, you know, various kind of things that you have automatically. In my situation, I was not reporting to anybody on the base. I was reporting to Washington, my own parking space of in the gym, a VIP locker, and that locker room. When sitting as the judge throughout the last several years, and going and holding public hearings where you had legislators and representatives from the governor that would attend, and of course even when coming into the courtroom, which holding trials throughout most weeks, accustomed to people when you come in, all being made to rise, whatever the rank, and remain standing until they were told to be seated, and likewise when you get up to leave. Situations where you exist in this type of an environment, and you have someone that comes in to see you, and you don't recognize that they have greater authority than you, though you may be very kind, and it's not meaning you have to be unchristian-like or anything, but you don't listen to someone that walks in and says, do this. You may very politely tell them to leave, or certainly ask them by what authority they are there. And if the individual is very troublesome, you may just pick up the phone and have the security police come pick them up and take them wherever is appropriate. But this is a kind of an action that even, you know, I don't even pretend that I ever had any high office as such, but certainly nothing that would be comparable to the ruler of a nation. And you have an individual like Moses, who indeed is great, but I'm not so sure he was even at this point fully in the eyes of Pharaoh. And he is coming, you let my people go. And you're talking about a tremendous asset of Egypt. Just turn them loose and send them off. No wonder he's hardened his heart. He could have said, no, yes, rather, pick up all your belongings and go. And that's what he should have done. Now, you notice something else with regard to this, and that is that God is very plain, as he is so many times, and that is that he said, here's what I want you to do, or here's what I'm telling you to do, not just what I want you to do. Here is what you are to do. I don't care who you are. I am far greater than you are, and you're going to learn that lesson. And not only that, if you don't do it, here is precisely what is going to happen. And it's going to kill a lot of your animals. It's going to just wipe them out. And he tells them when it's going to occur. Said, tomorrow. Verse 5, the Lord appointed a set time, saying, tomorrow the Lord shall do this thing in the land. And the Lord did that thing on the morrow, and all the cattle of Egypt died, but the cattle of the children of Israel died not one. Notice what Pharaoh did? Very logical thing. He sent over to Goshen to see what had happened to the animals over in Goshen. Now, you've killed all the Egyptian animals. Now, what happened over there? If you were Pharaoh at that particular point, what would have been your reaction? Would you have said, get these people out of here? Would you have ignored the situation? Or might you have even been tempted to say, go over there and get all of their animals and bring them over here? Or if you've managed to kill all of ours, we're going to retaliate and kill all of your animals. Well, you had a number of options you could have easily have resorted to. But he definitely didn't let the people go. And so the Lord resorts to yet another thing. And of course, it's his intention that he's going to gradually bring Pharaoh and Egypt to their knees. Tells Moses to take, and Aaron, to take a handful of ashes, from the furnace. Now, in this particular instance, they aren't told that they're going to speak to Pharaoh. They're to do it in his presence so that he sees it. But they apparently don't have to say anything. So they took the ashes of the furnace, stood before Pharaoh, and Moses sprinkled the ashes towards heaven, and of course it became boiled, breaking forth flames upon man and upon beast. And here, of course, as you might have expected, and I think again it's rather ironic with regard to the magicians, they had already proven themselves to be incapable, and we're told the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boil was upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians. But he hardened his heart, and he still would not let them go. And so the Lord told Moses to rise up early in the morning, and this time to stand before Pharaoh and to proclaim to him how he's going to bring these plagues upon him. And in verse 14, you notice part of the statement, that thou mayest know that there is none like me in all the earth. He's teaching the man a lesson. Some people learn the hard way, and some people just never learn at all. And in verse 16, he goes on to say, and in very deed for this cause have I raised thee up, for to show in thee my power, and that my name may be declared throughout all the earth. As yet exaltest thou thyself against my people, that thou wilt not let them go. Here's a man who very hardened of heart, very determined in his attitude, exalting himself and no doubt still considering himself to be extremely important in comparison to God. One of the things that strikes me, and there's no indication that it ever crossed the mind of Pharaoh, but particularly as the events continued to transpire, was whether it ever crossed the mind of this man that this God that he is fighting with, having done that all that he has, if he couldn't literally destroy Egypt. I mean literally destroy all of the Egyptians and just leave the land entirely for the Israelites. And it would just be inhabited by them. And God could have. But that did not serve his purpose. It definitely would have gotten around the world mighty quickly. But God, of course, was intent on teaching some other lessons as he would bring the children of Israel under the leadership of Moses out of Egypt and liberate them and through the wilderness and ultimately to the promised land and the great lessons spiritually that would flow from this. The next plague that you will recall was to be one that he told them was going to happen, that God was going to send, a very grievous rain that would be accompanied by hail. And he even told them that they needed to bring their men, their servants in. They needed to bring their cattle in. And we're told that those who indeed took this seriously brought their servants and their cattle in. But obviously there were those who did not take it seriously. And as a result, of course, there were others who were lost. You can very well tell then that all of the people haven't been fully impressed as yet. And that in spite of all that has occurred, they haven't taken it as seriously as they should have. And so we're told that it was such a grievous hail and rain and fire that went across the ground. Never had there been anything such. And of course, it destroyed literally everything that was in the field that could be destroyed. You can just see the nature of the land at this particular point. It has to be somewhat barren in nature. And the people surely are somewhat miserable as a result of all that has already occurred. And Pharaoh sent and called for Moses and Aaron and said, I have sinned this time. The Lord is righteous, and I and my people are wicked. Entreat the Lord, for it is enough, that there be no more mighty thunderings and hail, and I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. Very clearly, Moses didn't believe him. It sort of reminded me with regard to King Saul when he continued to seek after David, and even on one occasion allowed himself to be the one who was guilty of sin and misdeed. And yet clearly David didn't believe him, and rightly so, because Saul continued to seek his life. And that's about the way this man is as well. I sort of wondered here with regard to it, because servants are sent out to carry the message to Moses. And then Moses comes to Pharaoh, and very clearly during this time the rain and the hail and the lightning and all is still continuing to exist. Wouldn't be surprised if God had parted that rain and hail in order for Moses at least to pass through it without any injury. And so there is tremendous destruction that takes place, but at the request of Pharaoh, Moses goes out and once again calls unto the Lord, and all of this ceases. As you move into chapter 10, you continue to see the struggle that is taking place between these two men, of course with the hand of God involved. The Lord once again is instructing Moses to go unto Pharaoh, and he's going to show some mighty things again to him. And in verse 3, a part of what Pharaoh is told is, "How long wilt thou refuse to humble thyself before me? Let my people go that they may serve me." And the promise is on this occasion that he's going to send the locusts, be such number that they have never seen, not only during their generation, but in past generations. And in this instance, you notice that having said this, that Moses and Aaron turn about and walk out. And that's not something, I don't know about the custom and traditions in that part of country in that day and time as one would stand before royalty. But you don't have to be before royalty today that when you stand before someone, and particularly in that situation, that though you may have finished speaking, you just don't turn on your heels and walk out. You wait to be properly dismissed. And yet, that's precisely what was done in this instance. From every indication, they turned and walked out. And then there was a discussion that took place between Pharaoh and his servants. And the discussion went in verse 7, like, "How long shall this man be a snare unto us? Let the men go that they may serve the Lord their God. Knowest thou not yet that Egypt is destroyed?" No doubt a greater discussion that took place, but in any event, they sent then for Moses and Aaron, and they were brought back. And what you find is a further discussion and negotiation, with the first indication that they're going to let them go, and then Pharaoh, in a very, I guess you might say, political manner, sort of shifts the subject and asks the question after having said, "We'll let you go, but then who is going to go?" And Moses makes it quite clear that all, including all of the animals, are going to go. And of course, Pharaoh's not going to agree with that. Well, of course, there is more to this as it unfolds, and our time is about up. One of the things, very quickly, I want you to recognize is what was happening there is not all that different, if different at all, from that which occurred during the lifetime of Christ with regard to the scribes and the Pharisees. They listened to the words of Jesus, far greater individual than Moses. They saw the miracles which Jesus performed, far greater than that which was performed by Moses through the hand of God. They could not deny the miracles. They could not defeat him in their discussion or arguments. They were forced into taking a position in which they either had to agree with him and follow him, or they would harden their hearts and oppose him. And we know they chose the latter course and ended up in putting Christ to death. And as I mentioned, as you finish the 10th chapter with regard to Moses, that's exactly what Pharaoh said with regard to Moses. "Take heed to thyself, see my face no more, for in that day thou seest my face, thou shalt die." And that's the manner in which we are sometimes forced. Leaves certainly perhaps many lessons, but the one that I would leave with you at the moment is that we need to be very careful that we do not harden our hearts. and be led down a pathway not that God would have us to harden our hearts at all. And yet, as we are faced with either believing and obeying that which the Lord commands of us, if we begin to choose to not follow Him, we'll probably find that indeed our heart gradually becomes harder and harder. And as we well know, people do reach the point where they cannot be reached because of the status of their heart. And had we been the Pharaoh of that day and time, we might have acted in exactly the same manner. Let that not be the case. Thank you very much.